Hi Australian true crime friends, lots of extra stuff for our patrons this week, with a video from Narelle updating us on her television career, giving advice for last week's guest Elaine, and generally being awesome as she is, plus a ticket giveaway to see serial killer whisperer Amanda Howard live, plus a ticket giveaway for Vaughan's Pentridge tour, plus, as of last night, an extra episode of Australian True Crime featuring our favourite crime reporter, Andrew Rule. His podcast is called Life and Crimes, and he'll be featured in a full episode of Australian True Crime soon. But if you'd like to get involved with all that extra stuff, just go to patreon.com/AustTrueCrimePod. That's A-U-S-T, Aust True Crime Pod, and sign up. This episode of Australian True Crime involves stories of sexual assault. It's definitely not for children, but please decide if it's right for you before going any further.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb.
Everyone's favourite former detective, Narelle Fraser, is back with another of her most memorable cases. This one comes from fairly early in her career.
I thought I'd talk today about a really troubling stalking that I investigated sort of reasonably early on in my career when I was just learning to be a detective. And it just shows how something that you might think, and this is probably a lot for the police officers out there that are listening, that what you might think of as like just something reasonably minor, if you dig and ask the right questions, it's like one of those wow moments.
The stalking stats are really concerning too, aren't they? Do you know the stalking stats?
No, I don't.
Let me find some for you because I was just, hang on.
Yep.
Yeah, 1.6 million women and 663,000 men in Australia have experienced stalking in their lifetime.
That doesn't surprise me.
Really?
No.
I mean, we
And that's reported.
That's reported, as you say. A lot of people don't even know they've been stalked.
That's right.
That's incredible.
So I was training to be a detective, and by this stage I've done stints at the Rape Squad, Child Exploitation, Carlton CIB, and I've done a fair bit of work at CPS in the old days, which was Communities Policing Squad, which is now SOCETS, Sex Offence and Child Abuse Investigative Teams. But basically they're about sex offences against women and children. Mm-hmm. So you get a bit of a gut feeling about sex offences, but also you learn a lot about how sex offending starts.
Yeah.
So I also said to you, I've said before, that I find the psych behind sex offending really interesting. Like, what causes somebody to become a sex offender? Why did that person do that at that time? What is going on in their life, or what has gone on in their life? What's their reason for offending? Is it that their wiring is just a bit askew? Is it through abuse themselves? Is it a behavioural issue? Is it learned behaviour? Have they grown up in a family where they believe women are second-rate citizens? The way that they watch their dad, their stepfather, treat their mum. I'm not making excuses for them. It just might be a reason. So this job is about a burglary that was reported on a unit. As it came across, it was just a normal burglary. Mm-hmm. When I say that, a burglary, from a police point of view, is when somebody enters a property as a trespasser and they've got to have the intent to steal, to assault a person or damage property. So burglary is a lot about intent. What is their intention in getting into a house? So I'm not giving anyone excuses out there, but if you get somebody that goes into a house, say a drunk, and he just goes and lies on a bed because he's drunk and he just needs somewhere to sleep, that's not a burg.
Right, okay.
He is there as a trespasser,
yep,
but he doesn't have any intent to steal, to damage. He just wants somewhere to sleep.
Mm.
So there's a very fine line.
Mm.
So
does that happen?
Yeah, it does. Every now and then.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, every now and then somebody will just be so drunk and they just find a door open and they just go in and, yeah, I know, like it's bizarre. Anyway, so this victim of this burg, it came across as I'm training as a detective at this point, right? Mm. So I read a report of a victim of a burg, a single 18-year-old female. And what the burg said was that the clothes had been strewn along the driveway. Well, the washing basket was near the front door. Nothing was taken in the unit. And what had happened in the report, it said that the young girl had told the parents about it. Mm. And she didn't want anything done, but she just told them, and they are the ones that said, oh, I think you should tell the police, right? Mm. The point of entry wasn't established. The boys that went around, they're two males, they couldn't work out how this person had got in. Nothing was disturbed, nothing obvious. But to me, isn't it funny, from all my experience with sex offences, a burg on a single 18-year-old, all of a sudden, yeah. I just have a little bit of a, what's that about, right?
Mm. And with the clothes strewn across the driveway too, that's ringing alarm bells for me.
It did for me.
Yeah.
But the boys, nothing against the boys, they were pretty new at the job.
Yeah.
And so reading this on our system, it was like, and this was in our area, so I'm, you know, as a training a detective, I'm responsible for anything a bit out of the ordinary, really, and just looking into things. Anyway, so I say to the boys, I go down and see them downstairs, and I say, so what sort of clothes are in the driveway?
Mm.
And they said, oh, I don't know, I didn't ask.
Oh.
No, but I get that. You know, they're not looking at it like me, having had, I don't know, 8 years' experience by this stage, but I have a very keen interest in sex offences. So if you didn't, yeah. I can understand, oh, that'd be terrible. Can you just describe? So, you know, it's very a very wide net.
Okay.
Right? And I said to them, did you ask her if anything unusual had happened of late, anything? And they said, well, actually, not really. It was just they wanted to really, and I understand this, tick off the job. You know, they've gone to the burg, they've taken reports. The girl seemed okay, so off they go to the next job. I get that,
mm-hmm.
being new at the job. Anyway, so I said to them, I reckon you should call her back.
Plus, as you said earlier, she was disinterested. So maybe
very.
She didn't want to report it. Her parents did. So maybe she was sort of going, oh, I don't know. No.
Exactly.
Nothing. I don't know, clothes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was only through mum and dad.
Yeah.
That, all right, you know, you think, God, mum and dad, give me a break. Yeah. You know, all right, somebody's got in but they're out, you know. And maybe also I can understand thinking that's a bit hard. I don't want the thought of anyone being in my head. I want it to go away.
Yeah.
So when I said to the boys, you know, what sort of clothes, and they said, look, we didn't ask, but it was probably just normal stuff out of your clothes basket, I don't know. And one of them just said in passing, oh, she did mention something about a bra. That's how he said it, right? Well, now I am, you know, like this is like the sex offence of the year.
Yeah, now I'm thinking lingerie scattered on the front.
Well, a bra.
To me. Yeah, but that's a piece of, at least, lingerie.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just a little bit different. And when they went, they called her, as suggested, and this is how we found out, oh, she did mention a bra, because they've rung her back, right? And she said to them that she was just in passing again, oh, I am missing some stuff from my clothesline.
Oh.
A bit of further prodding from the boys. Again, she's very distant, I think you would call it, standoffish. And she says, oh, you know, I've just missing a couple of pairs of undies. And the boys say, is there anything unusual or anything that you've thought of? And she said, well, actually, a couple of weeks ago, I found the front door open.
Oh.
And she said, Michelle.
That's scary to me.
Settle.
No, that's scary to me.
Of course it is. And she said, but I always go out the front door and I just thought I hadn't pulled it properly, the front door. By this stage, this is a full, well, not a full-on sex offence, but absolutely confirmed in my mind. But the boys, I think they think I'm a little bit settled down, Narelle.
Well, no. Imagine if they got a load of me.
Yeah, you're right. That's why I'm a policewoman and you're not, or was. Yes. So my right radar has gone through the roof, but I can see them looking at one another thinking, you know, she's a trainee detective, thinks her own shit doesn't stink, and she's trying to make a name for herself, you know. Mm. Anyway, so I put it, you know, I'm thinking an 18-year-old female, her clothes have been gone through, the front door's open, clothes are missing from the clothesline, the bra's on the front. But I am also very aware that this is fairly typical of how a stalker or a sex offender behaves. So I say to the boys, I want to go around with you and see this woman. Really? That, you know? Mm. But as I explain it to them, they start to I can see them processing it and thinking, yeah, I hadn't actually thought of that. So I said, maybe by a female going around with you, the girl might be a little bit more comfortable, because the boys said she was quite standoffish and it was like getting blood out of a stone, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I go around with them and I'm trying not to put the fear of God in her, but also I just said to her, look, I just want to ask a couple more questions. So I drill down a fair bit more. So I drill down about anything, yes, thanks, about telling us about the door, but anything else, like in the last couple of weeks. And she goes, well, and we got on quite well. You know, I felt she felt a lot more comfortable. And she said, look, I can't find my favourite red dress. Mm. And she said, I know I only hung it up 2 weeks ago because I'd been to a 21st, I'd got drink all over it, and I've had it dry cleaned, and I've put it back in my wardrobe. And she said, I was going to go wear it last weekend to something or other. And she said, I can't find it. Right. And she said, I've also found a can of Bundy and Coke outside my bedroom window. Oh. And she said, I don't drink Bundy and Coke.
Certainly I don't drink it outside my own bedroom window.
Well, yes. Oh. Well, that's something I hadn't thought of, her sitting outside her. See, that's good, Michelle.
Well, I'm getting better.
The parachute theory?
Yes.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Oh, God. But I, you know what I am thinking of is that time that you, I'll never forget, went outside and found semen on somebody's windowsill.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, there was, but you won't be surprised to know I did check.
Of course you did.
Yes. But there was nothing. Couldn't find any footprints or anything, but I went around and had a look.
Of course you did.
And I said, what did you do with the can? She'd thrown it away, you know. Mm. Anyway, so I asked her if you had any, you know, issues with boyfriends, admirers. Anyway, no. Anyone got a spare key? And she said, well, the real estate agent has. And I said, could you think of anyone at the real estate agent? And she said, look, there's a guy that comes around that cuts the cuts the grass for the flat. And she said, there's a maintenance guy. He came in because she had a bit of a problem with the laundry tap or something. But we look into all this and we find nothing. I say, we've really got to look at the local sex offenders, recent releases, just to see who's around. And we have a bit of a look and there's nothing really that comes up. But I do say to them, I know, again, boys, generally with a book, you might do a door knock, you know, of a couple of places. But I said, I think we need to do a proper door knock. Mm. We need to have the right questions, really pointed questions, asking the neighbours. And we push our boundaries a little bit rather than just a couple of doors either side. I think we should go around the back and just, you know, a good maybe six, half a dozen houses, one way or the other, opposite all that.
Because at this stage you're thinking you've got at least what we used to call in the olden days a prowler, aren't you?
Yes.
If someone's, you know, snowdropping, pinching her undies and
maybe
drinking outside a bedroom window. So hopefully a neighbour maybe has seen some guy.
Correct. Yeah. But also I'm thinking if he's done that to her, there would be others.
Okay.
I think.
Yes, okay.
Right? Not all the time, but some, you know, it's often just they don't just target one person,
yes,
because
so, yeah,
they get to like the feeling, the power, all that sort of stuff. So anyway, okay, seriously, nobody's going to go out tonight after listening
no
to this. So we do the door knock, but a really extensive one. And we find that a neighbour about six doors down, this did my head in, a neighbour six doors down, the woman answers, you know, a mum, and I ask her, you know, anything happened recently? No. And I said, is there anything unusual that you just can't work out? Anyway, she says, well, I have had, my undies have been in my drawer, in my undies drawer, and they've been wet.
Oh, my God.
And she said, like soaking wet. And she said it was about a month ago. And she said, I just couldn't work it out. And she thought to herself, I must speak to the kids because they're obviously putting the washing back before it's dry. And she didn't want to sort of have a go at them because she's just, you know, she wanted to.
At least they're doing the washing.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. It must be the only household in Melbourne.
Yeah.
So anyway, she said, I must, you know, talk to them about putting the stuff away and not making and not, it not being wet.
Oh.
So anyway, she says, I said, oh. And, of course, I nearly bloody died when she said that.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's undies and it's clearly sexual. Well, that's what I thought. Anyway, so, and she said, and last week my daughter happened to mention to me about wet undies in her drawer. And she said it was just in conversation. And the mum said, me too. That's happened to me as well. And the two of them, I don't know whether it's because I'm an investigator like I am that I think, far out, what else do you need?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm thinking the same thing, but then I'm visualising myself in my own home and I just would find it impossible to believe that someone's
but also,
been in my house and wet clothes
correct
in my drawer.
But you wouldn't think of that,
no,
would you?
No.
That's right. But having the the previous report,
I can understand you would think that, but I would not think that.
No,
in my
and
own
so
home.
When you hear it all together, you think, what? You wouldn't go to the police about that, but when you don't put everything in context, anyway.
Yeah.
So the mother and the daughter, they think, oh, anyway. So they speak to their dad and the boys, the kids in the other in the family, and no, I haven't done anything like this. So they all sort of. How weird.
Mm.
And she says, as if that's not enough for me to nearly have a bloody heart attack, she then says, a few days later, she said, there was a bag of wet underwear of mine and my daughter's, and it was on the front veranda in a plastic bag. She said, it was so bizarre, I just couldn't get my head around it. I'm thinking, this is what she's saying. I'm thinking to myself, how weird.
How weird. And again, it's like, am I really ringing the police to go, hi?
There's some wet undies on my veranda.
I've got some weird underpant issues going on at my place. Could you send someone round at your earliest convenience?
And I can imagine as a police person.
Yeah, right.
Just taking that call, you'd think, hello, we've got one here.
Right.
Seriously.
I mean, am I calling the station? Am I calling 000?
Yeah.
Which.
Is it an emergency?
Is it an emergency? Do I
you
want
can
it locked?
See both sides.
Charlie
can't
Bazzino
you?
Always says, always ring 000 because then it's locked.
Yeah, I found some wet underwear on my veranda.
Oh.
Yeah, you're right. But
okay.
They
I will
all.
Now.
But they all thought, how weird.
Yeah.
There's that. So we take reports of that. There, we cannot find. I try and say to her that, look, I'm not sure. Mm. It's possible that somebody has come in. I can't think of anything else. Can you? Because I'm just trying to get her to start thinking. Not saying, oh my God, you've got a sex offender that's come in.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. So
good God.
Yeah.
So she's six doors down
from the 18-year-old
girl.
Correct.
Oh.
Anyway, then in the door knock, we go sort of around the back to a couple of units around the back. Anyway, we find a single mum who we talked to her and anything unusual, and she goes, well, actually, yes, she said, I think somebody's been laying on my bed.
Oh.
And I said, what makes you think that? And she said, look, you might think I'm weird, I'm strange, but she said, I've got an 8-year-old son. He's been sleeping on my bed a fair bit, you know, with me. He sleeps with me sometimes. And she said, of a morning I always make my bed and, you know, then we go off to school. Anyway, a couple of times she's come home and she's seen that her bed has been laid on, and she's assuming somehow her 8-year-old's got in, you know, like while she's having a shower or something, getting ready for work, that he's been on the bed. Anyway, she said last week he went to stay at his dad's.
Mm.
And she said, I came home and the bed, it was disturbed.
Mm-hmm.
Like she said, the sheets and everything weren't all, it was just somebody had been laying on the bed.
Mm.
It sounds crazy, but she said, I didn't think of reporting it. What am I going to say? I think somebody's sleeping on my bed. And she said, I can't find any... You know, nothing else is. Anyway, so, and she also said she thought that she may have been imagining it. So then while we're sort of in the days after the initial reporting person, the 18-year-old,
yeah.
She rings us and she says, I've just come home at lunchtime, and she said, I've found some of my knickers on the driveway with the crutch cut out.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. We've gone, and we haven't just gone a step up. We have gone,
yes.
Like the behaviour of this person, and I feel, look, it is a man. There is no, like, I have never investigated a sex offence involving a woman cutting crutches out of undies.
No.
Never. So his behaviour is escalating, and it's also becoming riskier because... What he is doing by that, he's putting it on the driveway to do your head in.
And in daylight hours?
Yep.
Yeah, while she, in the morning.
Yep, at lunchtime. Yep. She's come home from work.
Yeah. Do you know anything about the psychology behind cutting the crotch out? I mean, did any, you know, during the process, did anyone
talk
to you about that or no?
No. I know, and I still don't quite understand. I think it's more... Well, I don't know. I think probably they smell the crutch. They, you know, because it's so, it's a power thing. So I suppose by having the crutch of the person's undies with them.
Oh, to take away.
To take away.
Oh, I never thought of it that way.
I don't know. So I believe, I still don't know how entry is being gained, but I have no doubt he is in the house getting off on these women.
And every house has its own... attraction. Every house has its own action that he partakes in.
Yeah.
That's what's fascinating to me. It's a different thing in every
Absolutely.
House.
Absolutely, yeah.
After the break, the door knock continues and the neighbourhood offers up more interesting stories. Coming up on Australian True Crime, Narelle gives us an insight into the way detectives prepare for an interview with certain persons of interest. But first... A lock on a door piques Narelle's interest and changes the course of the investigation and a family's lives.
In the door knock, we also identify a family between all these addresses where I've got to say it's interesting to say the least, and a little light goes on in my head. A family, mum, dad and 3 kids. Dad's out of work and he's home all day. Mum homeschools the kids, and there's 3 kids, a little girl 10, a boy 11 and a boy 13. The kids, for a little bit of pocket money, they deliver pamphlets. The family appear very, very close. They don't mingle much outside of their little bubble. I don't know why. They were just very insular, I suppose. And they had a sort of alternative lifestyle, you know. They homegrown veggies. They were vegetarian. I'm not saying that every vegetarian
no, I get it.
Is going to be a sex offender.
No.
But they also didn't believe in doctors. They had, you know that sort of,
yep.
Those sort of people. Yep. They were in the lower socioeconomic demographic, absolutely. Didn't have a lot of money. You know, the house didn't have much. It was very basic.
Yep.
You know. Anyway, the 13-year-old boy, I've never been able to put my finger on it, but there's no other way of explaining that he was just a bit different. He was really big. Like, for a 13-year-old, he was a big boy. And it was just, that gut feeling that something's amiss.
Mm.
I didn't know what. And anyway, on speaking to the family, I was asking him a little bit about how long they'd been there, all that sort of stuff. And the 10-year-old sister has got a lock on her bedroom door.
Mm.
And I said to the parents, that's unusual, what's that about? And they said, well, she's got no privacy, her brother barges in all the time and she doesn't like it. And they said, we've asked him to stop, but he continues. But the parents didn't seem alarmed. By this stage, I reckon I found him.
Oh, yes, right.
The fact that a 10-year-old sister...
Yeah.
Has to have a lock on her door. He's got no control. The parents have no control.
Mm-hmm.
But also the fact that there's a lock on the door of the... I just think...
Mm.
And, again, he's delivering pamphlets.
Of course, he's out and about in the neighbourhood.
So he's, again, don't think because somebody delivers pamphlets, but it's just... It gives him a reason. He's out there. He's looking. Possibly, this is what I'm thinking to myself at the time. But I'm starting to think to myself, I reckon we may have found him.
Mm.
During all this, we receive a telephone call from a father in the same sort of area, a bit further away. But he's got two teenage girls. They sleep in the same room, and somebody has been outside their window in the last week because he's found a can of Bundy and Coke outside the window. Yes, again, I checked the windowsill.
How was it? Don't just move on without telling
clean,
us.
Yeah.
Clean?
Clean.
Okay.
So apparently it was a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old in the bedroom, but the 16-year-old had a new boyfriend.
Mm.
And so she didn't want, when the father asked, you know, who's the Bundy and Coke, they played, you know, they knew, apparently they'd seen it there, but they didn't want to tell the parents because the parents would think it's the new boyfriend and yes. It would cause all sorts of problems, right? Anyway, so we speak to the new boyfriend, the 16-year-olds, anyway, watertight alibi, no issue.
Mm.
So there is also somebody around there. So this is getting very, very concerning.
And again, they have no way of knowing that the Bundy and Coke can links them to a crime that's happened
possible.
In another house in the
possible.
Neighbourhood.
Mm. Possible. Remember the parachute theory.
Yeah.
But, yeah, absolutely, a Bundy and Coke.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
it's a hectic drink for a 13-year-old, by the way. But anyway.
Yeah. And what's that masking? Why is a 13-year-old... Mm. If it's him at this stage, we don't know, but, you know. Anyway, so in that, where those two girls are living, we do a little door knock. And we find out that the 13-year-old, the homeschooled, often stays at a house right opposite the two teenage girls.
Oh.
He stays there regularly. And when we do the door knock, this person that where the 13-year-old stays sometimes, she says it was an agreement between the family and me to give mum and dad and the sister a break.
Mm.
Really? And I said, oh, can you tell me? Oh, she said, look, the 13-year-old is just difficult to control a bit and has a few issues. And I said, what type of issues? And she said, oh, just teenage stuff, you know. Anyway, so I go back to visit the parents of the 13-year-old and I say, why didn't you tell me that it's so bad that you're actually like almost respite, you're sending him to someone else every now and then to give you some help? And the response was, we can manage on our own. We don't need any intervention. We don't need any police intervention. He's just a strong boy. He's growing up and he's pushing the boundaries. Yes, he loses his temper. Yes, he's difficult to control at times. We need a break and so does he. So we send him there, you know, one night a week or whatever. So,
but it's so interesting that everyone specifies the sister. The younger brother is never mentioned when it comes to his out-of-control behaviour, but they've never mentioned any sexual acting out.
No.
No, they refuse to mention that.
But even if it was happening, I think the type of family they were, they would, you know, sort of stick together and not, because they were very close-knit.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm very concerned at this stage by the 13-year-old. He doesn't have very much interaction with other kids because he's homeschooled. Mm. Of course, the pamphlet delivery, he's clearly got anger management issues. He's showing violence to his siblings, violence to his parents. They can't control him. The sister with the lock on the door. And really, I'd have to say, concerning me was the fact that the parents weren't actually protecting the 10-year-old. Like, I suppose to the best of their ability they were, but certainly from my point of view, I fear that that 10-year-old is unsafe.
Yeah.
If you have to put a lock on the fucking door.
Yeah.
So we want to speak to the 10-year-old. See how there's so many avenues in one simple burg?
Yeah.
So we want to speak to the 10-year-old, but the parents won't allow us.
Okay.
And they say there isn't a problem. We can work it out ourselves. So I'm so concerned I decide I'm going to ring DHS because I think people get the feeling that DHS is all about, they're going to take the kids off, they're going to go to court, they're going to separate the family. DHS's mantra really is about keeping the family together and trying to get services to help families that are struggling with violence, with sex offence, all sorts of stuff, but they want to actually keep the families together. But their role, DHS's role, is to protect children from harm. And even though it's not confirmed, I am concerned for the 10-year-old. The fact that the parents won't let us speak to her as well, but DHS have a lot of power with kids. Mm-hmm. And if they don't believe they're being protected and they're unsafe, they can actually walk into a house and speak to the child and, you know, they've got a lot of power in that sense. It wasn't high on their list, but it was certainly, I made a formal report. So DHS visit and they agree that there's some issues and they recommend that the 13-year-old goes and stays with another family member to give everyone a break. And then they speak to the 10-year-old. I go as well, because from a police point of view, protection of the child is paramount. In this instance, we have to make sure she's safe. But then if there is an issue, if she happens to mention something about sex, want me to be there, DHS as well.
Yeah.
So we go and visit her. We establish rapport. It's quite difficult. And she's clearly scared of her brother.
Mm.
But the parents have instructed her not to talk to anybody outside about home stuff because that is our business. You don't talk to anyone about personal stuff like this. So to get the little girl to try and, like, it's almost like we're trying to undo what the parents have told her. Mm. So you've got to do that very slowly and very...
gently, I guess.
Gently is the word. Very. Yeah. Mm. So you don't want to criticise the parents, but you also want to make sure. Anyway, she slowly starts to open up. This is probably about the third visit. And they go and see her at school with the parents' knowledge, but we don't want to see her with the parents because we feel that she is inhibited by her parents. So the DHS say basically we have to speak to her. We're either going to take her away or with your blessing, we will speak to her at the school. No worries. She slowly starts to open up. And she said that her brother insists that she and him stay outside in the tent and pretend they're camping quite a lot, like every weekend. And she doesn't like it. She says, I don't like it. And we say, well, why don't you like it? Tell me about that. And she goes, I don't know. So a picture is starting to emerge. And we say, LGHS say, now the lock on the door, tell me about that. Well, she says he keeps coming in and I don't like it. And we say, well, what didn't you like? Well, she said it was always at night and he'd try to get into bed with me and he won't leave. When I get undressed, he walks into the shower. And we said, did you tell your parents? Yes, I told my parents. And they'd come in and tell him to get out and, you know, leave her alone and go back to bed. So she eventually admits incest. Oh. It's happened over the period of 12 months. So we do what's called a VAR statement, a video audio of kids. Only specially trained police can interview a child of a sex offence. And it's in a special room with special equipment, special wording to make sure that they understand what the truth is and all that sort of stuff. And it's the way we get around, because a kid at 10, what they think the truth is to what you and I do, we just have to make sure that she understands how important it is that she tells the police the truth about what's happened. Yeah. So we'll just say things like, if I said today that you came to the station in a fire truck, is that the truth or a lie? And they'll go, oh, well, it's a lie. And you'll go, why is that a lie? Well, because I came in the car with Mum. Okay. So if I said to you that you came to the police station in a car with your Mum, is that the truth or a lie? And they'll go, well, that's the truth. And you'll, so why is it the truth? Because it really happened. So we need to establish that they understand. Anyway, she did. She was really good with the truth and that sort of stuff. You know, and we say, like, what happens? Because we need them to understand the consequences if you tell a lie to the police. And, you know, you'll go, what happens if you tell a lie to the police, to me today? Oh, I'd get into lots of trouble. So you know they get it, right?
Did her parents know what was going on between
Yes. I think they might have had an inkling, but it was all just too hard to deal with. And they thought, we'll send him round to the friends around the corner.
And the lock on the door. And
Yep. And that was, looking back, you can say we can be critical. But that was their way of coping with it. And also, they didn't want any intervention. They thought they could manage it themselves. And I get that.
Yeah. And I guess they didn't want to lose their son either.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much chance of the son staying there. Yeah. So we need, with this, we need him out of the house immediately.
Yeah.
So DHS send him to another family member. That the parents now get it. If they don't do what DHS says, the little girl will be removed from the home to go somewhere safe, and so will the boy. Because, but the parents are angry because they see us as interfering in their lives. We can manage this, you know.
Yeah.
He also needs to be interviewed ASAP. But interviewing children, a child offender at 13, it isn't straightforward. Any child between the age of 10 and 17 can't be interviewed as an offender without... You've got to have all sorts of, you know, you've got to have an independent person. There's all sorts of issues. A child under 10, there is what's called an irrebuttable presumption that a child under 10 can't commit an offence.
Oh, okay, because we just assume they can't understand enough to know.
Yeah. But from 10 to 17, we can interview them, but like between 10 and 14, for instance, you can't take a forensic sample. You can't take a fingerprint without going to a court and getting a court order.
Okay.
So that's what I mean. There's all sorts of implications with children. It's not easy, but I understand that. Mm. You know, the kids, they've got to be protected, and unless they've really committed a murder, maybe an attempted murder, arson, causing death, or culpable driving, everything is heard in the children's court, mm-hmm. and bail is the preferred option with a kid.
Yeah.
It's unusual to remand a child. You've got to have bloody good reasons. And would you believe, I don't know if incest would be up there.
Yeah.
Okay? So they've got to have an independent person present, which we did. We had, I think it was the Salvos came in. Mm. And obviously the parents weren't suitable in this instance because we're not convinced that they get the seriousness of it all.
Yeah.
But also the parents in this job, they're good people. They're just not too sure how to manage this situation.
Yeah.
We know that this is tearing the family apart.
Yeah.
But we need to protect the 10-year-old, but also we need to protect the community and we need to help the 13-year-old. Yeah. And we've also confirmed in our own mind that he is absolutely the offender. He's doing the burgs, the stalkings. Mm. I'm concerned for the safety of the victim, but I'm also concerned for the rest of the community and for the other victims, you know, the wet undies and all that. Mm. So anyway, he says no comment in the interview, which is quite within his rights. However, that doesn't help the situation. So what we do is we get him in contact because we need more evidence. We don't have really any eyewitnesses. We don't have anybody that's seen him coming out. We don't have any forensics. We've got no fingerprints. Mm. We've got nothing.
Yeah.
And all the Bundy and Coke stuff, that's all gone because everyone's thrown that away, you know, the far. Anyway, we organise counselling. A few weeks later, the counsellor rings and says, I want to make an appointment. He wants to talk to you.
Ah.
So the counsellor, something has happened and the counsellor has got to.
She got through to him.
Got through to him. Wow. That we can help you and you're going to. Anyway, so just to plan and prepare an interview for anyone, whether it's a kid or whatever, this is like any other interview. You know, you've got to consider things like where, when, would you believe, what sort of a room are we going to do the interview in? Mm. Are we going to do it? Are we going to have a desk and two office chairs?
No, I can understand that.
A desk is a barrier.
Yeah.
So if you want somebody to feel comfortable, you're not going to put a desk and these office, you know, stiff office chairs.
Certainly not a child who has been homeschooled. So he is not used to any kind of formal environment.
No. And we want him to be as, because he is coming to us saying, I want to tell you, I want to get better.
Mm.
So what we do is we decide we're going to have a couple of like lounge chairs, like a very informal lounge room. But also there's a line because we also need him to understand that this is very, very serious. Mm. So that's what we plan. But we also have to think about things, what to wear. Now, are we going to wear a suit and tie, for instance, or, you know, something a professional person would wear, you know, a skirt suit or a trouser suit or whatever. We decide. We're going to go casual. We're going to go jeans and a T-shirt. But all these things are in the preparation and planning. And who's going to do it? Are we going to have a male and a male? Are we going to have a male and a female? We decide we need a female, me. Anyway, so he tells us everything. The 18-year-old?
Yes.
He found an open window somewhere. But he'd seen her on all of them. He'd seen on his pamphlet run. The 18-year-old, yes, that was him. He'd taken her undies and all that, but he really got off on he wore her dress.
The red one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He'd go home and he said that it just made him feel good. He'd been watching pornography and he'd thought I think he was probably acting out. He didn't say this, but I think we all understood that he's acting out what he's seen, you know, in pornography. It's got him, he's got this askew sort of idea of what, you know, women and sex is all about. Anyway, the creepy one was the wet undies.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. What had happened was that he had gained entry through a window He went to the drawers. He got the undies, took them home, showered in them.
Oh, I see.
Oh, yep. Showered in them.
Oh.
And masturbated.
Uh-huh.
And then took them back home and put them in the drawer, a bit like cop that. So then that was the mother's undies. And then with a couple of photos and that he saw around the house, he realised that there was a teenage daughter, so he does the same thing with the daughter. He gets her undies, takes them home, showers, masturbates, goes back, puts them back in the drawer. But then he felt so good and so powerful that it was like a bit of an adrenaline rush.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when he decided, I'll take some more and I'll put them on the front veranda, like to really say, really scare the shit out of them.
Yeah, yeah, really wake them up, really really say notice
but
this.
But do their head, you know, like he's playing with their mind.
Yeah, notice this.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right.
Yes.
Notice this.
Yeah.
And the single mum with the 8-year-old, he was laying on the bed masturbating.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah, I know. So the court date, we end up bailing him after the counsellor. The court is very quick because we need to engage him in a professional psych, in a sex offenders program or something like that, because the court has got lots and lots of different options. And one of the options is what's called a therapeutic treatment order. And this is only for kids. It's very specific. It's for kids between 10 and 15, under 15, so 10 to 14 and, you know, 364 days, who have exhibited or shown sexually abusive behaviours. And we are talking power, authority, trying to get somebody else to engage in sexual activity that's unwanted.
Yeah.
Another party is incapable of consenting. And would you believe even in the law it says with incapable of consenting, it actually has due to age, cognitive impairment or the family pet.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know.
Mm.
Fancy even having to put that in.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, so he completed his treatment order. He was never charged because if you complete a therapeutic treatment order, it's managed by Department of Human Services, but it is at the court. The court is where it's organised, but DHS manage it. And if you complete it satisfactorily, you're never charged. This is only between 10 and 14.
So that means you're never a sex offender. You're never a convicted sex offender.
Correct. I don't know what's happened to him. I know that he, the treatment order worked, as in that he did it successfully. But it ended up tearing the family apart. I don't believe he has anything to do with his family anymore.
Really?
The little girl, she went back to the family because the family got how serious it was and they eventually came around.
Oh,
but
okay. Yeah, how do you feel about that as an investigator about...
I think kids should be given a second chance.
Even for those kinds of crimes and even...
Yes, because if something is not done with that 13-year-old, if he's put inside...
Yeah.
I think he's going to... It's not going to help him.
Yeah, you're right.
I
don't know what else to do.
I don't either, because also there's the victims in this.
Yes.
But there's some things that the victims don't really need to know. Like masturbating on her bed, for instance, that single mum, unless we had to, I don't actually think I would tell her that he was masturbating on the bed. I think I might say to her, look, he laid on the bed and he fantasised a bit. But there's sometimes I think you don't really need to go down that path, you know.
No,
if she asked me, I couldn't lie.
Yeah.
But she never did.
Yeah.
She probably knew the answer, I don't know.
Yeah.
But sometimes It's just, you think, what is that going to gain? The fact that he's come in and laid on her bed, you know, sometimes you try and just sort of push it down a little bit rather than emphasise, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Because if that happened to me, I'd never live in that house again.
God, no. No, I don't think I could anyway, because you'd never convince me that he wasn't going to come back.
Yeah, exactly.
After you could put him through 100 courses, you'd never convince me that he wasn't going to come back and climb through the same window he climbed through last time and do it
again. And it's funny, you know, you say that about how do you think about it. I think kids should be given a second chance.
Yeah.
However, in the other breath, I say that I don't think sex offence programs work, but you've got to try something.
Well, that's it. I mean, otherwise, are we locking up a 13-year-old for the rest of his life? And if so, then we're going to have a lot of very full facilities. And I'm not even going to say prison. I don't know where. But, I mean,
you'd go to a youth.
Yeah, but even then, I mean, it's full.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that is an incredible case. You've done it again. Thank you. I always think to myself, surely she's going to run out. But you never do. That's amazing.
Well,
that's one of your best.
Yeah?
Just between you and I. That's amazing.
I thought I would involve the interview, you know, what you do in an interview, what you think
about. That's great.
Because I think it's...
If you're experiencing sexual assault, you can call 1-800-RESPECT. That's 1-800-737-732 from anywhere in Australia. Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. We'll be back next week with another episode.